This is Leafs Breakfast.
I think it's just kind of a bit of a snowball effect. Like I said, things just kind of spiraled out of control a little bit. And, I mean, it wasn't really hockey in that third period. I mean, it was just a bit of a gong show. So, I don't really know how else to put it.
Welcome into Leafs Breakfast here on First Up, here on TSN 1050. Aaron Kurolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. The Toronto Maple Leafs losing 6-3 to the Winnipeg Jets, but that is far from the story in this one. A wild third period termed a gong show by Austin Matthews. And let's welcome in our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Gong show, an appropriate term for what we saw in the third period, Dregs?
Well, maybe if you're participating, like Austin Matthews obviously was. For the rest of us, it was, didn't really see that coming type of period of hockey. But it elevated clearly when Pierre-Luc Dubois literally mauled Austin Matthews, and they both got penalties. Toronto, I'm sure, as Sheldon Keefe explained, post-game believed and felt like they got cheated there, that they should have came away with the power play. So temperatures heated up a little bit there, but that was just a bizarre game kind of from start to finish with all the power plays and the offensive chances and everything else. But, it's going to be interesting to see what the Department of Player Safety does today, if anything. There were a couple of incidents there. Neil Pionk obviously taking out Rasmus Sandin, should have been a penalty on the play. And then the retaliatory play, which saw Jason Spezza first screaming from the bench at the officials, how do you let that go? And then his first opportunity, which is what, maybe a minute or two later, he clearly targets and goes low on Neil Pionk in retaliation. So I'm not expecting that there could be supplemental discipline, but we know how they manage these things, right? So those clips of that game from that period would have been sent out to their group of 10, 12 guys. And at some point today, George Parros is going to have to decide whether anything requires more than what happened last night, perhaps a fine or, worst case, I suppose, a hearing.
Yeah, the Goon Squad definitely showed up for the Maple Leafs last night. It was a crazy game. Dregs, I guess the bigger question here is when do the referees actually act as members of the Department of Player Safety? Because I think it's the job that they do sometimes within games that let stuff like this escalate. And you can even, rewind back to Saturday night. Marcus Foligno drives the net, clearly, makes contact with the goalie and Jack Campbell. Thankfully, he wasn't injured on the play, but no call made on the play. And, last night there was a series of events where they just let stuff go that probably could have changed, the emotions of the game if they just would have called it correctly. And I guess this just highlights some of the, and don't get me wrong, it's a tough job that these officials do, and there's some great guys that do actually officiate in the NHL, but when do they start getting held accountable for, not doing their part to properly manage or at least help the Department of Player Safety do their job, which is, a lot, not let things get out of hand like they did last night?
Right. Yeah, there would be reports filed by the officials, as we know. I mean, that's in the regular season and in the playoffs, just game by game in the National Hockey League. Eventually, they are held accountable, as we know. And this isn't going to appease the fan base of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But, each referee, each linesman, the officiating crews are gauged game by game, and it is a cumulative effect. And if you have too many misses, or there are too many asterisks beside your name for things that maybe should have gone differently in managing a game or just officiating a game, well, you're probably not going to qualify for extra money, which is postseason officiating. And so there is a level of accountability there. And if you look, again, historically, the number of officials that just flat out lose their jobs, they don't grab headlines at the end of the year, but it happens on an annual basis. I'm not defending these guys because there are clear misses that are unacceptable. And it's no different than us analyzing a player's play. If a defenseman coughs up a puck or a goalie lets in a soft goal or something happens. You know, how many times did we pick on William Nylander early in his career for some of the soft plays that he'd make on both the offensive and the defensive blue line? I mean, that is the power of video replay. And in our case, we can, you know, just stop things and take a closer look and analyze that way. So media has really had an impact on officiating in general, but that's fine. Technology and cameras aren't going to become less and less moving forward. So these guys have to be sharper, just flat out. They have to be. And I don't disagree with you. That period last night in Winnipeg had some tone to it. Toronto pushed back in the second period, but that game was setting up to be an absolute whitewash, right? The Winnipeg Jets were steamrolling. It felt bad for Joe Wall at one point because he was effectively being held out to dry, hung out to dry. But if they call the penalty on Pionk as one example on that Rasmus Sandin hit, or as I said earlier, maybe the Leafs come away with a power play with Matthews getting ragdolled by Pierre-Luc Dubois, you know, maybe there's not a different outcome. They still lose the game, but you don't have the dangerous situations which we saw last night.
Yeah, and the thing that I just don't understand, you talked about it, how we analyze, you know, watching the game and you know, say what we need to say about certain situations. How is there four referees on the ice that watch that play with Rasmus Sandin, who has the puck? Like, what else are you watching without the guy having the puck, and still nothing comes from it? And I think that's the frustrating part in all this. And I guess, you know, my follow-up is, you know, leading into the weekend, we heard the news of Mitch Marner not being available for the Maple Leafs. I was wondering if you have any information about, you know, his potential return or what he's dealing with, and if you were able to get any information on the severity of what Rasmus Sandin could potentially be dealing with.
No, there wasn't a lot of info coming out of Winnipeg late last night specific to Sandin, other than, you know, we heard Morgan Rielly and others talk about, you know, how much pain he was in, and I think we could clearly see that, couldn't we, as he was being helped off the ice to the Toronto Maple Leafs dressing room. So I'm sure he was evaluated last night, and that evaluation will continue, and it didn't look good. You know, I mean, It's hard to doctor from afar, but when you see a player in as much distress as Sandin was last night, I think you can assume that it's going to be a while. You know, Mitch Marner is a little bit different. I'm getting mixed kind of information here. On one hand, I'm told that, you know, he's okay. He's going to be fine. In fact, you know, he felt like he was going to play one of those two games, but he didn't play either game. We know it's an upper body injury. We don't know the specifics of that. But what I was told just prior to last night's game was that Marner come back into Toronto, and the medical team of the Toronto Maple Leafs in Toronto and the accessibility to the specialist, whatever, you know, he'll get more looks today and make a final determination on where he's at.
Well, let's hope for some positive news both on Marner and Sandin today. And you talked about today being a busy day for the Department of Player Safety. Surprisingly, yesterday, Connor McDavid gets a 5-minute and a game misconduct for boarding. Gets kicked out of the game. I mean, you looked at the hit. I don't think there was an aggressive intent there, but clearly not a good play with Kempe being hurt and bloodied. Do you expect the Department of Player Safety to be busy, maybe handing down a suspension for Connor McDavid?
Well, and look, Carlo, as all the shenanigans of the Maple Leafs third period with the Winnipeg Jets was going down, within that 2-minute span, McDavid hit Kempe. So, I mean, there must have been paper flying and heads spinning in the room of the Department of Player Safety last night because they were hard at it. The one view that I was presented with last night, and this is not a determination that Connor McDavid is home free. You can clearly see that Dave Tippett thought that it was an overreaction, right? Now, I'm not going to say it was an overreaction, but, you know, one opinion I received from somebody who's involved in the process said that it looked to them initially that Kempe kind of slid in front of McDavid at the last second. And it when you break it down, it does appear to be more of back shoulder hit and not a hit square to the numbers, which you know, Department of Player Safety will remind you see that often, and Department of Player Safety never acts on it. This one is elevated and draws our attention because it's Connor McDavid, and he got a boarding major, and he was thrown out of the hockey game. But I'd be very surprised if anything more comes out of that from McDavid.
In conversation with our TSN hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Dregs, it got pretty ugly in Vancouver on Saturday night. The Canucks lost 4-1 to Pittsburgh. The fire Benning chants echoed through the arena, and the decision was made yesterday not only to fire Jim Benning, the general manager of the team, but also the head coach in Travis Green. What was your reaction to everything that transpired in Vancouver? Not to mention they have a new head coach, someone we're very familiar with.
Well, how can you be surprised, right? Given everything that the Vancouver Canucks have suffered through to this point of the season, you know, something had to give. The dam had to break. I guess a bit surprised that Francesco Aquilini, principal owner of the Vancouver Canucks, basically cleared out hockey operations. Now, he's kept some very familiar faces on board to help manage moving forward. So Benning is out, along with John Weisbrod, and Stan Smeal, who's been there forever, will act as interim general manager. Ryan Johnson will get an elevated role. Chris Geary will probably get more responsibility among the management team. And we'll learn more today from Aquilini whether or not this buys the Vancouver Canucks a little bit more time. Are they going to continue on until the end of the season and then, you know, kind of rebuild their department from there? I'm sure Henrik and Daniel Sedin will have more of an active role, more responsibility, again, within management there. So surprised that Aquilini was so sweeping in making his changes. But look, Benning and Travis Green, that's low-hanging fruit. Low-hanging fruit. Normally, the manager gets the opportunity to fire the coach, but in this case, Benning has been there for 8 seasons now. And Aquilini probably didn't want to tie another coach and another contract to Jim Benning. And, you know, fairly shrewd ownership business management here because, as we know, Travis Green got the contract extension, just a 2-year extension in May. So he's in year one of that extension. Boudreau comes in. He just wants to get back on an NHL bench. So he's under contract in Vancouver for the rest of this season and next year. So the contracts would match each other in terms of the length. So not a bad deal overall. To go back to where we started here, Aaron, we can't be surprised. You know, look, Aquilini's going to get peppered with questions like, why did you wait so long to do this? And what happens if the club doesn't respond? And is this a roster that this management group is going to be able to pull apart piece by piece? It's going to be an interesting media availability today.
Oh, it definitely will. Dregs, you reported yesterday that Boudreau's deal is for this year and for next year. Were you surprised to see them give that type of length? I mean, it's not a very long-term deal, but no general manager is in place. So you think Boudreau's just kind of a placeholder for the next couple of years and the GM might be able to bring his own guy in a couple of seasons afterwards? Like, how do you think that all plays out?
Well, look, I don't think Francesco Aquilini is owner of the Vancouver Canucks. He is worried about what the next general manager thinks. You know, he's just got to try and stabilize something and salvage whatever he can of this season's the Vancouver Canucks. There's still a lot of hockey left. I mean, they're nowhere near a playoff contending team, but you can still make improvements and make strides. He just needs a veteran voice. There's normally a bump factor when it comes to Boudreau, and you can almost say that about any new coach, especially a veteran coach brought in. Not surprised at the term at all, because as I said, that fits the business model of what Aquilini and the Vancouver Canucks would be looking for. And nor am I critical of Bruce Boudreau. You know, we've seen this in the past, right? I remember Paul Maurice going into Carolina and taking over there for his buddy Jim Rutherford on a short term. You know, that happens on occasion, especially when you're making a coaching change in season. And you know, we'll hear from Aquilini, as I said, with his media availability. You know, what if, you know, the Vancouver Canucks management group actually kind of turns things around here a little bit? That's normal because the players aren't going to be happy. They're not going to be, you know, upset that they've got a new coach to listen to or a new manager is now overseeing from the GM role. But they're proud men, and they're going to feel like they need to accept responsibility for what has been a horrendous start. And they do. There needs to be more accountability in that dressing room. And if there isn't, then Bruce Boudreau isn't going to have a whole lot of success in Vancouver.
Dregs, you know, you look around the league too. We've already seen, three teams make changes with Chicago, Montreal, and now Vancouver. I think another city that's feeling a lot of the heat right now, if you're the coaching staff, is Philadelphia, who has lost four in a row and winless in their last eight. What do you expect to happen in Philadelphia right now when it comes to their coaches?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's fair to question, obviously. You go back to last season, and I don't know if you call it a feud, but it was tough love, if that's being polite, Alain Vigneault and Carter Hart. And how that situation was managed. And Hart comes back this season as at least what appeared to be a start of the bounce back. I mean, he was terrific. And the reason why the Philadelphia Flyers were in a lot of games, Chuck Fletcher, general manager, makes some pretty bold changes, didn't he, to that lineup. And I, for one, obviously wrong to this point, thought Philadelphia was on the uptick. I thought the Flyers were going to be a decent team and certainly worthy of playoffs. Contention. And man, their last 10, 15 games, they haven't been anything near that. So I'm not sure what the management structure or the ownership structure, I should say, the Philadelphia Flyers looks like anymore, but there's got to be heat on Chuck Fletcher. Not that he's worrying about his job. Heat, I mean, to step in and do something. Vigneault looks like a real easy target for me, but I always say the same thing, you know, and it applies in Vancouver. And look, Bruce Boudreau has a longer coaching resume, obviously, than Travis Green. I'm in the camp of Travis Green. I think he's going to be a good coach. If you're Philadelphia, who is better than Alain Vigneault and is available? Is it Rick Tocchet? Certainly the history of Rick Tocchet. It would be easy. You know, Rick Tocchet's working in TV. So, you know, with a simple phone call, you could make that happen. So I mean, the temperature is hot in Philadelphia, and given the changes that we've already seen around the league in Montreal, now in Vancouver, you know, the stuff that's gone on in Anaheim, et cetera, I wouldn't at all be surprised to see Philadelphia do something very soon.
Yeah, I keep beating a dead horse. Another reason why the cap sucks in the NHL is because teams that struggle can't make big changes, so they resort to firing their coaches.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. There's never any salary, conversations or struggles when it comes to firing coaches. There's always a recipe for that. But quickly, Dregs, in some other news around the league, you talk about a team that's going to be encountering cap problems. The Vegas Golden Knights saw Jack Eichel start skating the other day.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if there's an update there, but seems like Jack Eichel could potentially be a trendsetter in the NHL right now, as we saw Tyler Johnson just have the same surgery that Jack Eichel just had. So is this a positive moving forward? Is he ahead of schedule? Could we potentially see him back soon? Give us an update on that.
He's not ahead of schedule, but that's fine, right? I mean, the good news is that he's out on the ice, and he has been for a bit now. Shouldn't be shocked by that either, right? He was walking around very quickly after having the ADR surgery, the disc replacement. Same agent, CAA Hockey, represents Jack Eichel and Tyler Johnson. So Pat Brisson and J.P. Barry had done a ton of research prior to Eichel having his procedure. So when Chicago decided that Tyler Johnson needed a neck procedure, you know, it happened very quickly. It was, okay, well, you know, let's make a decision on what the best path is. And within a week, he was in surgery in Los Angeles and getting it done. As far as Jack returning to the Vegas Golden Knights, the sense is that you got to be careful, and you'd have to be careful with any sort of neck surgery, not just because this is new to the National Hockey League, but the belief is he's going to get to 80-90% ready very, very quickly. And it could be that last 10-15-20% that maybe slows the process towards the end. So that's why you're not going to hear the Eichel camp or the Vegas Golden Knights say that he's ahead of schedule. They're going to maintain that timeline.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a fun day for the TSN hockey insider community between what's going on with Mitch Marner, what's going on with Rasmus Sandin, everything in Vancouver. So we appreciate you taking this
Department
time.
Department of Player Safety.
Oh, no doubt. You'll be a busy man throughout the day. Thanks, Dregs.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
You too,
right,
buddy.
That is our hockey insider, Darren Dreger.